Welcome to Inside the Spec. We are the podcast that bridges the gap between building product manufacturers and the architects who specify them. Each episode brings you unfiltered insights into how architects find, evaluate, and specify building materials. I'm your co-host, Megan Kavinsky, and CEO of Point to Point. We're an advertising agency focused in securing the architect's spec through results-focused marketing. And I'm joined by my co-host, Vardhan Mehta, a second-gen architect and founder of AceLab. AceLab is an AI-driven product selection platform that brings architects and manufacturers together early in the design process.
Whether you're a manufacturer looking to better serve the architectural community or a supplier seeking to understand the evolving needs of design professionals, Inside the Spec delivers actionable intelligence straight from the source. Inside the Spec, because understanding how architects think is the first step to becoming the architect standard.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Inside the Spec. I'm Megan Kavinsky, I'm your co-host, and I'm also the CEO of Point to Point. We are a building materials marketing agency that helps drive specification with architects. And I'm joined by my co-host, Vardhan Mehta. Vardhan is the CEO of AceLab. AceLab is a product selection platform that brings together architects and manufacturers earlier in the design process. And today, we are super thrilled to be joined by a longtime friend of ours. His name is John Crosby. John is the new president of the Window and Door Manufacturers Association. But prior to that, he has over 30 years of experience in construction and policymaking. Prior, he was at AIA, and thrilled to get his perspective on the industry and where we're going with a window and door specific lens. So welcome, John.
Thank you very much, Megan and Vardhan. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Yeah. Well, so John, usually we ask everyone, like, why did you become an architect? But you didn't, and so we won't. But we will ask you, why did you decide to take this role with the Window and Door Manufacturing Association? What made this the right time for you to join the team?
Sure. Well, to be clear, it was not a childhood dream sitting back in Matthews County, Virginia. But I will tell you, my time with the AIA absolutely inspired me to move in this direction. During my time there, working with building product manufacturers of all types across many categories, I found myself drawn to the fenestration space. Let's put that word out there so we can stop using it. But, you know, looking at the openings of the building and how it helps to define the human experience, how it absolutely affects the performance of the structure. And then the other part is, I think at the time, there were many in the window and door industry who were starting to have a little bit of an awakening about how separated they had become from the design community. And admittedly, they were beginning to have a little bit of a recovery from that. And it was perfectly timed for us at AIA because we actually invested in efforts to support that work. So I developed a real affinity for the people working for those companies. But it's just like a lot of things in life. The more you learn about something, the more you realize just what kind of meaning is behind a profession or a community or, in this case, an industry. And the craftsmanship that is considered core to the window and door industry is real. These companies have really smart people who are committed to ensuring that they're making the best products that they can make. And that's with whatever medium, you know, whether it's wood or composites or metal framing and things like that, but also moving away from single pane glass and ensuring that we have high performing glass that's installed in homes and buildings today. But the best part about taking this job, and this is what appealed to me the most, is that it didn't even occur to me until I was in the interview process. The outgoing president CEO said, this industry needs acceleration, it needs refocus, and it needs some energizing in terms of where it goes next. The word that I used in that dialogue that I've shared in many places is over-commoditization. The window and door for, let's just talk about homes, and in particular homes sold to the average American, windows and doors are not a part of the discussion. There isn't a conversation about, you know, are you looking for high performance windows in terms of energy performance? Are you looking for doors that have added safety and security features? There is no conversation about that. You get what you get. And I've been unafraid to present that challenge to anyone who's willing to listen, including the CEO of the National Association of Home Builders, Jim Tobin. We had a very healthy and friendly conversation about that and acknowledged that there are real challenges for a lot of categories relative to home building because we have a crisis in affordability. And so there's a push-pull problem here. And I think solving over-commoditization is really going to come down to what does this industry want to do with itself? There's been a lot of consolidation. Private equity has entered the picture on a number of fronts. Those two concern me more than anything else. And they speak to what I would say is a lack of innovation pertaining to what matters to the end user. Okay. There's a lot of innovation on things like energy performance and frame resilience and things of that nature. So you get windows and doors that will last a lifetime and will perform well. Whether they're accessible to the full market or not is another matter, and we've got to figure that out. But I wish for a window that I can have installed in my home that has electrochromatic shading built in, that has energy monitoring tied to a mobile app so I can see how my house is performing, that has automatic opening and closing, you know, relative to rain and things of that nature. There are all kinds of innovations that just simply aren't there yet. And it's because there's no Apollo space program for fenestration. We don't have a major investment across the board from the industry that says, let's get to that level where the consumer gives a damn way more than they do right now, because it will change what builders do.
Mm. Wow.
That was quite the opening. Yeah.
That is my scene.
I'm curious. See, at the very beginning, you mentioned how you became more aware of the fenestration industry because they weren't as involved with the design community. And where does that part of this stand, and how does that feed into the conversation that you're having around commoditization or accessibility of advanced features? What's happening now?
Well, I think it starts with let's just say probably three decades. Window and door manufacturers, like many building products companies, have followed the money. And the proliferation of production builders across the United States has been a major factor in all of this. But that means those production builders know what they're doing when it comes to buying on volume and making, you know, long-term choices about materials so that they don't have to think about it, you know, in another year, in another 5 years. They get deals where they can buy on volume. And that means window and door manufacturers don't always have to think about it. So all they're doing is making that product, getting it to distributors or getting it direct to the builder. And that was great news 30 years ago. It's not so great news today when it's really difficult for a builder to pivot on their margins and say, oh, sure, let's look at going good, better, and best so my you know, buyers can make a choice for themselves. That's a great idea for them to consider. It's not so easy for them to just jump in and do it. So I think that is the core problem, is that the industry chose to follow, I wouldn't call it the easy path. It just simply was the most obvious path to follow to maximize their revenue opportunities.
So you have now, you're very steeped in window and door. When you were at AIA, you had more visibility across a lot of different product categories. How common in building materials is what window and door is going through?
Gosh, I think it's more common than we think, but here's the problem. I'm going to talk about the window and door side first, only because I have to emphasize this. How many other product categories sit at the intersection of the art and science of building design? There aren't many. The insulation manufacturers, the siding manufacturers, I mean, heck, even curtain wall manufacturers on the commercial side are not sitting around thinking about the artistic quality of what they're providing as much as the science and the performance behind the material or the product. So that's a differentiation that I think matters, because I don't want to see such a vital part of construction and design stay over commoditized. But I do think if you look at the rest of the building products industry, I think tons of categories are over commoditized, and insulation may be chief among them, because all they do is operate on, well, what's the local code for R factor? And oh, yep, okay, we've got that. You know, I was attracted to Rockwool because of Rockwool's mineral wool fiber insulation and its acoustic attenuation properties and things of that nature. Wow, that sounded like innovation to me. So I think the over commoditization elements are all over the map in the building product space. And I don't know how they're going to get out of it. But maybe that's also a part of the problem with getting to, you know, sustainable housing and ensuring that we've got the best performing home as much as we are looking for the best performing office building or hospital or school.
So that's really interesting, John. On that point, I feel like a lot of the trends you mentioned in Division 8 that should be more mainstream and where like innovation should be happening across the industry. When you talk to those manufacturers, or even in this case, Rockwool, often something you hear from them is the market, the end users they think of as their ideal profile, they feel like they've already reached that and that's already saturated. And they feel like the demand is not there from, in this case, I'll go back to Rockwool and say, spray foam insulation users to switch to another type of insulation. And I would imagine this, the same trend is also happening in Division 8. What do you think is required for those dynamics to shift?
I think it's the same challenge that everyone has just for getting spec preference with a lot of architects. There needs to be proof that there's a problem with one type of application versus another. I mean, you mentioned spray foam. There are issues associated with spray foam, whether it's performance or, you know, air quality, or there's all kinds of concerns. What's real and what's defined and can be verified as challenges that would shift the preference model a bit. I think the same applies to our industry, you know, whether it's the, you know, the concerns over dumping of substandard product from offshore, or the use of, you know, a composite that may have PFAS chemicals contained in it. These are concerns that we're going to have to deal with. But for someone to make a choice to go in another direction, and let's start with professionals like architects and specifiers, they need the proof in the pudding. They need to know that that product or that material is actually giving them what they say what the company says is being provided. And then if there are tests to verify that, that's even better, because ultimately the third party verification is absolutely critical to the design professional. I'd say for the consumer, it's going to be a lot longer of a cycle to change minds. But, you know, I think the consumer preferences are becoming more sophisticated. Gen Z will have much greater expectations on sustainable homes than the millennial did, who had much higher expectations than Gen X. So I think it's going to be a generational shift that'll get us there for the consumer.
Well, as a Gen Xer, and you were talking about all those things, I was like, oh my God, I never even thought about that. Like for my own house, I've thought about it, to your point, for commercial buildings, but I never even thought about it for my own home. I live in an old house, so I just hope that the window opens and it's not painted shut, you know, so.
Well, this is where I wonder if we're going to start to see a boomerang effect. You know, you've heard the phrase resi-mercial when it comes to interior design. Yeah. You know, are we going to see commercial-dential shifts in terms of priorities with, you know, the quality of the human experience in the building? More windows, maybe not fewer, and, you know, but higher performing windows and doors, or higher performing insulation, or siding that actually contributes, you know, something more than just, you know, preventing water from penetrating the envelope. So that's a really good question. I don't know. It could be that we see a boomerang, but there's no question the generational shifts will happen. I think it's already happening in architecture. The fact that, you know, the risk takers who are considered under 40 and, you know, skew female, they want the EPD first. They don't even want to see the spec. They want to know you got an EPD because it's a threshold consideration. You know, if you're under 40, but you're male, you might tend more towards, you know, where are your BIM files? I want to see your Revit families, because if they're made, you know, with a high level of quality and I know I can use them, then I know I can trust you. those are things that now are redefining the landscape for a lot of these manufacturers.
Vardhan, are you getting ideas for your house that you're building? Are you going to have a commercial? And
you know, it's it's absolutely. I mean, in practice, I mainly work on institutional, and my wife and I, we renovated our first house last year, and then now we're building our second or third house now. And the thought process as a homeowner is so different, like the priorities. And I think like that's what I've realized, that you're absolutely right. Like there may be a channel in this industry that is already more open to innovation that will become the champion for this like change to accelerate, like for the innovation that should be happening across divisions, not just in aid, but like really across it. And how that might occur. And to your point, it's happened with interior designers bringing that to the interiors of homes as well. But one thing, John, you know, just to go back to innovation and you know the divide in the market, there's a status quo that likes where things are at right now. And you can imagine there's like new entrants in the market that see that need for innovation. There might also, you know, there may be existing folks as well that want that to happen. Do you feel like there's a friction there in terms of you know the status quo wanting to like hide the need for innovation, so to speak?
I think that does exist. You know, just take one sector, take windows and doors, because it's what I know best. You know, we have 40 window and door manufacturing companies within our core membership, and they're not monolithic. There are completely different perspectives, even if you look at the top five. But when they take their hats off as being Anderson or, you know, Elite or Panda or Colby or what have you, when they take their hats off and they talk about the challenge before us, they all agree that they need to do better as an industry. And that means not just better product. It's also, we need to find a way to get those products to market and make them more accessible to everyone. And that's another challenge in all of this, Vardhan, is the accessibility problem. I think we've hit a choke point on accessibility to better performing product because there's a lack of innovation that makes it game changing. You look at, I keep using the example of the innovations that Mercedes-Benz has brought to market over the last 20 years. They seep into the mainstream in many other lines or brands of automobiles, but they lead the way. And we don't have that happening on a dramatic scale just yet, especially when it comes to changing the mind of, you know, the either the building owner or occupant. We won't even say homeowner at this point. It could be way more than that. I think what we're going to see is some acceptance with the homeownership crisis being sort of a propellant in all of this, is we've got to find better ways to get better product to market and accept the fact that the volume will you know, allow the tide to rise instead of thinking we've got to recover it on every single unit of, you know, something that's Energy Star 7 qualified. I think that's where the drag occurs. And I think that's going to happen across numerous building product categories, because we are in a moment where I mentioned, you know, calling it, we don't have an Apollo space program. We don't. There's nothing in the building industry that's saying, wow, we really need the risk takers out there to go do something. And, you know, are there government incentives that can say, we're going to do this because it's the right thing to do, and we'll worry about the money later? I think those are choices that maps to sustainability as well. How quickly that's going to happen, who knows? I know the conversations we've had with legislators in recent weeks does not point in the direction of this being an opportunity for government to take advantage of that.
I, you know, just on that point, I think that's so true. Like, because going back to the trends you anecdotally mentioned about the windows you would want to have in your own home, I never thought of that. And I'm an architect by background. But when you said it, I was like, yeah, that would be awesome. I feel like that expectation from the average end user is not there. But if that there was that expectation, I'd imagine it also affects the supply side to have to innovate.
Absolutely. The pressure from building up consumer demand about the awareness of what's possible. I talk to my friends who are not in the construction space at all about what kinds of opportunities and innovations occur in the commercial space. and they think, gee, I'd never thought of that. That can happen. Mm. Well, it shouldn't take long for that to seep down from commercial into residential. But that, again, we spoke about that. The boomerang effect doesn't often happen, but it can happen. And in this case, it probably should. Mm-hmm.
So, John, you've mentioned a couple times in the conversation, you mentioned ENERGY STAR rating. Before that, you mentioned the testing data being so important. You know, what is really the gold standard for testing? How can testing or you know, data help support the cause that we're talking about here? Where does that all fit in?
Sure. Well, the gold standard for testing, I want to be careful not to overstep on that one, because I think there are many labs that do really effective testing, and truly there are opinions that vary as much as there are labs that do the testing. I will tell you this, and this is not an ad, you know, in our space, we have our own certification program that puts more pressure on the manufacturer in order to ensure that not only are they producing a good product, but they made it well, and it's made with great materials and components. And that's a tough thing. Not all of our members are even participating in the Hallmark program, because it's hard. And that difficulty, it's not just cost, it's rigor, it's time, it's effort, sometimes it's changing processes. So organizations that are offering up certifications in particular that establish that kind of rigor for the manufacturer, I think that is the best way to go in terms of helping consumers and builders and architects and remodelers and contractors think differently about the materials they select. But even having that verification, and by the way, to be clear, WDMA itself does not operate the program. We think that would be a little too close. We have a third-party company that operates it for us, but it is overseen by a committee of WDMA members who basically set the bar. If it's going to be done, it's got to be done a certain way. There are certification programs like that all over the industry. And then the part where I will put an ad out for things like Declare, I think, you know, when you're talking about material content, these are the areas where I think manufacturers have to embrace fully. A lot of companies have gotten into that kind of openness with their material content, but not enough. And a lot of it's more interior focused than exterior or building envelope focus. So I think we've got to think about not just the quality of the production of the material or the product. We also have to think about its ingredients and how it is that a manufacturer is either contributing to health or detracting from it.
Yeah. John, I want to make the complex situation you laid out for us in this first half even more complex, because I feel like right now, you know, if I think about manufacturers, I feel like they're living specifically in this industry in a time of total chaos. The past like 12 to 18 months, there was so much M&A that especially happened in Division 8. Now, of course, there's the tariffs, still more M&A happening in the industry. There's impacts of AI, supply chain disruptions. How does all of this fit into affect, you know, the other things we have talked about so far?
Wow. So I won't say we're in an existential moment. We're not there yet. But my greatest fear is that we end up there within the next 5 to 10 years. And that's not a good place to be, especially as the CEO of the association that represents this particular part of construction. I think it's easy for me to keep tossing the word out, but I think a solid commitment to innovation in radical ways that change, not just change perceptions, but actually change the products themselves. I think it's not about looking back, and it's not about looking around and trying to figure things out, like, how am I going to stay above water? It's how do I, looking forward and aiming for something that actually will change the industry. This industry needs to adopt a bit of an entrepreneurial mindset, much as, you know, all of software and the tech space has gone through for 20 to 30 years. It's not about what do people want. It's what can we do? And based on that, do it and show that there's a reason why people should want it or need it. I think that's one core element of this. I would, as the person giving our board guidance the other day at our meeting, I emphasized that we also can't sit around just worrying about what government is going to do tomorrow. The government will do what it does. You know, as much as there's fear mongering in Washington about, you know, the future of the country and things like that, this is a resilient country with resilient people, and we will figure things out. That's I have no doubts about that. But we are in the midst of, you know, doing a ton of things to represent our industry on the issues, but we should never let that get in the way of us being able to listen to our customers, make choices about what to do for them today, and then aim higher for a desired state for this industry. And the other part of this, I want to emphasize, in my 15 years in construction, I have never seen until now conversations taking place between numerous players in the construction association world. So NAHB, Associated General Contractors, AIA, the asphalt roofing manufacturers, companies, organizations across the spectrum starting to have conversations about like common challenges. That's what needs to happen outside of those associations, but within the space of architects and contractors and manufacturers talking about what can we do together that will help all of us, as opposed to staying in our lanes and just figuring out how to solve it for ourselves. That kind of collaborative spirit needs to happen. If we don't, it's going to do real and lasting damage, and there will be significant fall off. And I don't want to say this, but you know, an industry that has 40 some companies right now, major companies in our membership, I know there's lots more out there, but how long can they last? And that's my greatest worry. That's where innovation happens, is in the long tail. We all know this. So I want to find ways to foster that vibrant ecosystem that says we are about innovation and we can push companies forward, but they have to want to do it themselves. And that you can replicate that for any sector of building products.
Yeah. Love the optimism. I think that's a great point. Yeah.
Well, John, it has been great talking to you. You've certainly brought a ton of ideas, and even though we're talking about windows and doors, I mean, to your point at the beginning, you know, see this across so many different building product categories. So if you're listening to this, you know, think about your own industry. And if your industry segment isn't having these conversations yet, maybe you can be the person that helps start them and starts that collaboration with industry associations, starts it with, you know, others within your space that are maybe non-competitive to you, or even some of your competitors, to see what you can find out about how they're thinking about the future. But John, I would like to close with you with the same question that we try and ask everyone who comes on the show, which is, what is your favorite place, the most architecturally significant place you've ever visited, and why?
Megan, I gave this one a little bit of thought, and it's close to home, literally. Here in Washington, D.C., there's a place called the Krieger Museum, which is a wonderful museum. If you're ever visiting Washington, D.C., skip some of the Smithsonians and go up to Upper Northwest Washington to see this place. It's a Philip Johnson-designed home that was built for one of the co-founders of GEICO. And it is now a lovely museum housed with all of the artwork that was collected by the Krieger family. But the home itself is a part of the museum, and it's just such a stellar piece of architecture in amidst amazing homes as well, but stands out on its own and is the kind of place that makes you want to stay there all day long.
That's cool. Well, nice, you can visit. Probably you sound like maybe you're a frequent flyer there, you know, since it's right in your backyard. Yeah.
Been there a few times.
Yeah. Well, thanks, John, for being on the show today. And thanks to everyone who tuned in to listen. This is the end of this episode of Inside the Spec. We hope you'll join us for another episode soon. Bye-bye.